Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to FleetsandMac.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz. And we're going to do a healthy dose of Eagles, maybe throw in some Phillies and Olympics later on. But let's start right off with the Eagles, 17-0 win over the Steelers. We know that wins and losses don't mean all that much in preseason. But this was certainly a mixed bag. The defense looked very good, albeit against a Steelers team that did not have Ben Roethlisberger or even second-string QB Bruce Gadkowski. They had Landry Jones in there. No Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell, although we thought Bell's going to miss the Eagles game during the regular season because of the suspension. It was reduced to 3 games, but the Eagles have in the 3rd week. So they won't be seeing him again, but they might be seeing D'Angelo Williams, who also didn't play Thursday. But enough of who didn't play for the Steelers. Gordon, first game, first-team offense plays 3 plays. We got to see the first-team offense for a half this game against the Steelers. What were your impressions of the first-team offense?
Well, because they only played 3 plays, I mean, you expect it to look a little bit off, you know, because it's new coach, new system, game speed's different than practice speed. And, you know, so you expected, you know, a few glitches. But, you know, I'm not as down on what I saw as, some people are. I mean, I kind of like the way they use Sproles a little bit. They kept them in Sproles in there a while, and I thought maybe they kind of keep them on ice more in the preseason. But you can kind of get a sense of how they're going to use guys a little, which is all you really want to see. I mean, they're keeping it vanilla. They, like you said, they are playing Pittsburgh in the regular season, so you don't want to show too much. They don't have their top receiver, Jordan Matthews, in there. I'm sure we'll talk more about Duro Green Beckham later in the show, but you know, when it all shakes out, he could be their second or third receiver, and he was only in for a couple of red zone plays. So, you know, you may not – and the line is still unsettled. They're still, you know, experimenting with a few different things. So, you know, it kind of was what it was. But, you know, I think they did a few good things here and there. And, you know, overall they didn't made a march up and down the field. But Pittsburgh, you know, I don't know what the personnel they had. I know we talked about who they didn't have on there on offense. I don't know who they did or didn't have defensively. It's always kind of hard to tell in preseason games. And you start a lot of their guys who they yank kind of early. You know, that's the kind of thing that really I haven't had a chance to really sit and look at to know, you know, if they're having trouble moving against Pittsburgh second stringers. I don't really know if that was the case. But, you know, it was more to kind of see how the offense is going to function. And I do expect them to be able to, if the line gets settled, run the ball somewhat efficiently with Matthews and spread to get into Sproles' hands a lot more than, you know, Chip Kelly did. And hopefully when Jordan Matthews is in there, he could be a little bit of a threat, at least in the mid-range passing game. And then you can see, you know, Zach Ertz, you know, used a lot how Travis Kelce's used in Kansas City. So, we didn't see, you know, anything to get overly excited about. But, you know, I've been watching football a long time, and I've seen teams march up and down the field in the preseason, and they get in the regular season, and they can't find the end zone. So, yeah, I have to kind of take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I don't want to make too much of it, but, I mean, I was a little bothered by the fact that if it hadn't been for that forced interception the first half, I think it was by Jalen Watkins, to set up the field goal at the end of the half, that, you know, the first team offense would have played a whole half and wouldn't have produced any points at all. So I am a little bothered by that. But so let me ask you, though, given that the first game was an absolute waste for the first team, just playing 3 plays, and, you know, what we saw last week, this coming Saturday when they play the Colts in Indianapolis, that's, you know, we're not going to see the first team offense in the 4th game. So this is it coming up. I know the outcome doesn't matter, but what do we need to see, or to make you feel comfortable, what would you want to see from the first-team offense that we haven't seen?
Well, I need to see a progression, obviously. I mean, I talked about, you know, we kind of saw things that they how they lined up and their formations how the offense might function, but now we want to see it take a step further and make some big plays down the field and open some holes in a running game and obviously get some touchdowns and some points and change the field position around a little bit. I mean, Donny Jones changed the field position around a lot. He punted really well, but, you know, it was kind of helped them out a little bit in this game. But, you know, if they get the ball at their own 10, I think at least if they move to midfield and that kind of thing, it would be, you know, it's just, you just want to see a progression from the last game. And obviously, like you said, they didn't really do a lot statistically that's going to get you too excited. Obviously, not a lot of points. You want to see points. You want to see it, I guess, a little more tangible on the scoreboard or on stat sheet than in the first game. In the first game, you know, it was more about, you know, kind of getting used to the guy next to you almost, especially on the offensive line. So, you know, assuming they kind of are settled with their line and what they're going to try to keep going with, you know, because it all starts up front, you know, obviously, you know, take the next step, feel a little better. Again, they don't need to put up 28 points in the first half, but I suspect they'll play the whole first half, and I want to see them score at least twice. I don't think that's asking too much, even if it's a touchdown and a field goal. I don't think that's asking a little too much, double-digit points somehow.
Okay, let's switch to the other side of the ball. It was Landry Jones, but, hey, they still had four interceptions, and they were pretty nice interceptions. Nolan Carroll ran one back for a touchdown. The interceptions by Malcolm Jenkins and Aaron Grimes, although he hurt his shoulder in the play, but in the end zone, were really terrific catches. And certainly their interceptions are interceptions no matter who they're against. But, Gordon, how much do we know about this defense, granted that the Steelers were missing so many weapons, or how much stock should we put in the defense's performance, even though, you know, they were, like I said, they were playing against a team missing a lot of weapons?
Yes, they don't play. Again, I don't know if Pittsburgh was starting a lot of offensive linemen. I think they kind of pulled down a little early as well. But I don't think they had their tight end either. With Darius Green, I think they were using the guy from Penn State, Jesse James. You know, this is kind of how it's going to look for the Eagles this year. If they are going to be competitive in their division, they don't need to win. They may not even need to win 10 games to contend for the division title. If they're going to be in that 500 area and be in the mix, and it's going to be low-scoring, close games, it's going to be relying a lot on defense and special teams. And, you know, we saw in the first preseason game, special teams forced some turnovers, and the defense played well, and the defense, you know, forced, you know, four turnovers and four interceptions in the first half. It's just really phenomenal. Usually defensive backs make plays and break things up, but, the reason a lot of them are defensive backs is because they were wide receivers once upon a time who couldn't really hold on to the ball, so they were turned around on the defensive side of the ball. So to see guys make plays and make good breaks on the ball and good reads on the ball, and I think a lot of it, again, was, you know, up front. They were generating pressure up front, and I really think the personnel they have, where they kind of lucked into it, or, you know, they picked the right defensive coordinator for some of the personnel they had, and to switch back to a 4-3, and they have guys like Barwin and Graham and Curry coming off the edge, and a guy like Cox inside who's impossible to block, and then it kind of frees up the guys off the edge a little more. And, you know, we haven't even seen them yet with Michael Kendricks in there. So I think it's a lot of reasons to be excited. I mean, McLeod played in the first game. McLeod might have played the first game. Jenkins didn't play Jenkins didn't play. So, you know, we saw both sides. I think that's going to be a good pair of safeties. And I think we're starting to see the corners kind of, you know, McKelvin and Brooks and Carroll. I think they're going to be the three corners when the season begins. You know, Eric Rowe, you know, has his moments where he looks okay and moments where he kind of looks a little lost still. But, you don't need to rush Eric Rowe if he's not picking up the system as much. I think really it's going to be a good unit, and it's going to keep them in games, and they're going to have to keep them in games. I mean, I just had my fantasy draft. I almost took their defense. I didn't, but I almost took their defense because, like, I do feel they're going to be a team that's going to get sacks, turnovers, keep the score low, and I think the offense is going to try to control but also keep the score low, and that's going to be their formula. So they may have games where they still scoreless in the first half, but the offense, offense or special teams keeps them in it or creates, you know, some points, even if the offense doesn't drive down the field for any points. And it may be kind of, even though it's preseason or preseason doesn't always correlate to what we see, it may be kind of, you know, a forerunner of what we're going to see, you know, in the regular season.
Yeah, I was going back to what you said about the offense, and that's sort of the way I felt about watching the defense is, you know, yes, it's, you know, it's, the Steelers are missing a bunch of weapons, but I felt like watching this game, I could see how the pieces are supposed to fit together. I could see, it's going to be pressure up on the quarterback, and then taking advantage of that in the secondary with aggressive rush on the quarterback, and then, hopefully leading to bad, passes or pressure the quarterback throws off balance, you get a turnover. It's Landry Jones, but I could see how it's supposed to work. We'll see what happens when they play a team with a good running game. That's always where Jim, we had the wide nine here before, and I know it's a little different setup than when Jim Washburn was running it, but, a team with a good running game, when you're that aggressive with your pass rush, especially coming off the ends, teams are able to take advantage of that. We'll see if it happens, but at least I can see how it's supposed to work. Gordon, the way you describe this team, though, and the way you see it working, I don't think it's any surprise, but doesn't it sound like the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of style?
Well, yeah, with Alex Smith, who isn't really like a high-octane quarterback, and they run the ball a lot, and they have, a real dynamic back in Jamaal Charles, assuming he's healthy, But, yeah, it was the formula that they had there, and they just kind of, control the ball, use the tight end a lot, get first downs, and then figure, if you have the field position edge and you're getting first downs and you're controlling the ball, you have a good chance of ending up, turn it over, which is gigantic. You win the turnover battle. You look up at the scoreboard and you should have more points than your opponent. Now, we know the Eagles have some areas to fill that they aren't going to fill this season. So, they don't have everybody in place at every position, and certainly depth-wise to really Kansas City is a team that has playoff aspirations, and I guess if the Eagles can win a weak division, you could say maybe they do too. But yeah, it is the formula. It really is a formula there. At least it's a good one to start with. When you come in as a coach, you kind of have to always stay within yourself. You just want to do what you do well. That's so much of what sports is, and really is what football is. Do what you do well. Don't worry about four wide receivers and throwing 50 times a game. And if you really don't have the personnel to do it, some of those teams, try to do it and they fail miserably. I'd rather be a team that keeps it boring, slow and boring, and win games. There's nothing boring about winning games. So,
The Chiefs are not exciting, but they all do have a very aggressive defense, rushing the quarterbacks and real good pass rushers. I think that's what the Eagles are going for. Gordon, give me a player who helped himself against the Steelers, and a guy who maybe hurt himself.
Well, a guy who helped himself is, I hate to bring it up, Marcus Smith, I thought played really well in the second half. We didn't see him in the first game. And, it's kind of funny because I didn't realize he didn't play in the first game until I was watching this game, and they said he was out with a concussion. And, because it didn't even surprise me that we didn't even notice him in the first game. So, I felt that, he was a guy who, really helped himself. They're going to have a tough cut there on the defensive line. They're going to have some decisions to make. I felt he kind of put himself back into the equation there. It's tough to say. A player who didn't help himself, who hurt himself. Nobody's really popping the mind too much. There's a lot of guys who didn't really distinguish themselves too much, but I don't know if there's anybody. Do you have anybody in mind?
Yeah, I have a couple. One is Josh Huff,
I picked on Josh Huff last week. I was going to leave him alone because I picked on him last week.
I'll pick on him. He had a short pass that I think he held on to, and then he had another one that Sam Bradford couldn't have thrown it any better. It was a sideline route to the right sideline, and he just missed it. And he didn't make a good play. And I think at some point maybe Josh Huff just is what he is, and they keep waiting for him to. He's fast and he's got all speed and he's supposed to be waiting for him to turn that into being a good receiver, not an all pro or anything, just a good receiver. And boy, he fumbled last week, and he dropped. I think while we're at it, and it's funny you mentioned Marcus Smith, the first game not noticing that he wasn't there, have we had a Cliff Givens sighting? This guy's a veteran receiver.
No,
he doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And nor does T.J. Graham, who got cut today, by the way. They did cut four players today. Nobody of note. T.J., unless you think T.J. Graham's of note. Bruce Johnson was cut. Gordon, the running back. Cedric O'Neill from Valdosta State. Did I get that right? And there's one more cut. There's one more cut. I'll look it up while we're doing it. I forget who the other cut is. But nobody of note. But did I say Bruce Johnson, the center? Oh, well,
Xavier
Bruce Johnson,
the center from Maine.
Yeah, Xavier Rush was the other one. But, I mean, so let me go to the receivers. And you brought up that they signed Dorial Green-Beckham, or excuse me, they traded for Dorial Green-Beckham, getting for Dennis Kelly. They're taking a risk with this guy. He's very talented, but obviously he's had a lot of problems off the field from in college, from drug use to assault and a domestic incident, kicked off the team in Missouri. And drafted in the second round in 2015 by the Titans, who have already given up on him. Said he showed up to this camp out of shape and his effort's inconsistent. But, Gordon, the Eagles receiving corps, I'll ask you, was this worth the risk given the state of their receiving corps?
Yeah, given the state of their receiving corps, when I saw the headline, without reading the story, I'm like, I said, oh, great Howie, Howie Roseman. Oh, my God, I think he probably gave up maybe a second-round pick. I think we're not going to have a first or second-round pick. Green Beckham's a guy with upside, or maybe they gave up a conditional third down the, next, not in this draft, but the following year. And when I saw it was Dennis Kelly, who I feel has kind of had a chance, like we discussed last week, I felt like he was really plan A when the Lane Johnson thing came down. And he didn't play very well. He was standing pretty much looked like a statue. They moved on to plan B with the offensive line, because the idea of maybe him starting at right tackle and keeping everybody else where they were, and not rushing a rookie like Siamalu, obviously they got a glimpse of that, and that was the end of that. So giving up a guy that you probably might have cut anyway in Dennis Kelly, already kept as like your 10th offensive lineman, just because he has some experience, I don't think it's much of a risk. Of course, he'll probably go on and start 10 years now, kind of like King Dunlop, who was terrible here, and now he starts for San Diego all this time. But, giving up a guy like
good,
that.
Though.
Yeah, he's not
really
good,
though,
but but somehow he manages to start here. But for that, I figure without him, you have a draft pick, and give up a guy that you can survive without. They had to make that deal. I don't have a problem with it, but it is very concerning that a team would give up on a high draft pick that quickly. He was beat out already. Probably a guy running with the First Unit as a receiver named Tajay Sharp, who I really wanted the Eagles to draft. I probably had it in my draft preview for PhillyFanatics.com. In fourth or fifth round, he ended up going in the fifth round to Tennessee. And he was already running with the first team, and Beckham was bumped down to the second team. So, that tells you some things you need to know. So, and things I read about him was his field awareness. He really doesn't know where he is a lot of the time, and he's going to need to be coached up, and he may not even give you much this year. But if he's a guy that you can keep around, then they're going to have Brian Dawkins kind of be his babysitter and everything like that. And, I guess it's worth the investment, because when he was in high school, he was called the next Randy Moss. So we all know what kind of freakish athlete Randy Moss was. He also had some issues upstairs, but he was a great athlete, and for a time just a receiver, like you couldn't go into a laboratory and come up with a better receiver in terms of size, speed. And he has everything, the size, the long arms, the big hands, the speed, all that. So it's worth working with, but maybe he gives you something this year, maybe he doesn't. In the meantime, there's a little-known undrafted free agent named Paul Turner, who wasn't even considered like one of those priority undrafted guys. He was just a guy you kind of add to your roster way after the draft, because teams had a lot of receivers, for passing drills and things like that, who has really, Josh Huff isn't careful, Paul Turner could take his roster spot. Reuben Randall's not careful, he could take his roster spot. So
Chris Givens too, throw them all in there.
Chris Givens for sure. Givens was kind of brought here because he had supposedly had some kind of symmetry with Sam Bradford, and I guess that's another thing I'd like to see before the preseason ends. I'd like to see Sam Bradford maybe hit Chris Givens 25, 30 yards downfield to feel good about that deal. You know? So, I mean, they didn't give up anything for him, but they did reach out and sign him in free agency and kind of made a little bit of a fuss about it. We kind of bought it a little bit. So, you know, kind of got lost in all the thing with the draft and taking Carson Wentz, so we kind of forgot about, you know, some of the free agent signings they made. But before that, when they signed him, they kind of sold us as a guy who can maybe have some upside. So, I'd like to see more out of him. He has produced in the league here and there, but, you know, there's always a Paul Turner every year, that comes out of nowhere and makes a team and produces. He may never be a great receiver, but he may end up being a nice little slot receiver in this system. And Josh Huff may not fit, and Josh Huff maybe belongs more in a Chip Kelly type system.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Turner's on his way to making this team, as far as I'm concerned, unless something drastically changes. The receivers, the quality depth there is so low. And I think all the guys you mentioned, I mean, Jordan Matthews says he's going to be back for game one. Let's count on that. Who's the next receiver? Nelson Aguilar, who had a good catch against the Steelers for 22 yards, but also dropped one. It was tad behind
right.
him, but it's definitely a ball that should be caught. And he's the next best guy at this point. He hasn't been very good. So, yeah, I'm
right.
There's one other spot I want to ask about, Gordon, last Eagles thing. And this concerns depth, and there's a couple of different positions where depth is a problem, and quality depth and depth with experience. But I think – linebacker, and Kendricks is out, and he came back to practice yesterday. You know, Joe Walker's out for the year, a seventh-round pick, and it's a big deal. So what does that tell? By the way, I was surprised, I looked on the Eagles' depth chart, and I was actually listed third at middle linebacker, which I was very surprised to see. But, at this point, it's Don Cherry's in front of me at second team, and I'm third. But what does that say about their linebacking core going into the season when – like, so when it's a big deal that Walker's out for the year.
Yeah, it's a shame because he had the team made. I mean, he was playing well enough to make the team. But if he had to play a lot of meaningful snaps, just because of lack of experience, I think they might have been in a little bit of trouble. I think they're probably looking more at him as a backup and a special teams guy. But he had the team made and it is depth. And he would have been somebody, yeah, you can pick up somebody, but he would have been somebody who was with you from the start of, rookie OTAs all the way through now in terms of knowing the system. And it's a shame he's out, and who knows, he's next year all he is a seventh-round pick coming off a knee injury. There's no allegiance to him, and that could set him on a downward spiral to never make it in the league. And really the only guy that you can count on is Good, and Good did start outside in Kendrick's spot. So, at least he can – I always thought as Good as just a guy to play in the middle, but at least they're maybe out of desperation. I'm not sure. They're trying him at different spots. You keep talking about, Stephen Tulloch. A lot of people are bringing his name up, but how much? He's 31 years old, I believe. He's probably an old 31. He's played a lot of snaps. He was a three-down linebacker early in his career. That's a lot of tackles. That's a lot of blocks you got to shed. I'm sure if he came here, he would add a little bit of stability and a little bit of a comfort level if somebody got hurt. Because even if he had to move into the middle, say Kendricks got hurt, he could move into the middle and you could always maybe put Hicks outside. But, what you really want from your backup linebackers, you want them to play special teams. And I don't know if this stage in his career, Stephen Tulloch, gives you much on special teams, if anything at all. So, they're really going to have to scour the wire and bring somebody in and coach them up on the system. And they may find a situation where they have to hurry them into a game, and get caught in a coverage when the guy doesn't know where to be. And, I'm really surprised they didn't address linebacker more. Through free agency.
Yeah, they're very thin there. And I think Tulloch seems to be hanging out there and almost waiting for a starting spot where backup linebackers pretty much have to play special teams. I think you're right. I think he's waiting to see if somebody gets hurt and he can go into a situation where he can start and not, be counted on to play special teams. Gordon, Eagles play next Saturday against the Jets, and then they get down to 75 by the Tuesday the 30th at 4 o'clock, and then we have that last game. I'm sorry, against the Colts, and then the last game against the Jets, and we'll talk more. I want to shift to the Phillies. And not to discuss their chances at the wild card, which just drove me mad this week. And I mentioned it in my Phillies notebook this weekend, to hearing media speculation about how the Phillies can get back in the wild card. Just stop it. You know, just enjoy what they are and not get there. But the big news this week was Chase Utley's return. And Phillies fans responded with just a fantastic ovation for him when the game started. That's up on PhillyConnects.com, that video. But I want to ask you, some people did have a problem in his first game back. Utley homered, hit a solo homer, and then hit a grand slam. And after both home runs, and the game was a pretty lopsided game with the grand, by the time the grand slam was hit, Phillies fans brought him back out for a curtain call out of the dugout. Some people had a problem with that. Gordon, did you have any problem with the fans cheering for Chase Utley as a visiting player after he hit home runs?
You know, I guess in baseball there's a little different etiquette because, you know, it's a long season. And like you said, it's one game where, you know, you weren't going to win anyway. You know, it was so lopsided, and he had played his whole career here until he was traded last season. You know, I certainly would have an issue with it. You know, in different sports, I would have an issue with it if, say, you know, a Flyers game and a former Flyer came in and scored a goal and they got a standing ovation, unless he was, you know, somebody really special, you know. And even then, you know, I don't know, you know, I couldn't imagine it at all in an Eagles game. But I guess in baseball, you play 162 games. There's a different etiquette involved. He had played his whole career here, so I guess I could give it a little bit of a pass. Maybe I'm just mellowing in my old age as well. Maybe Gordon of 5-10 years ago may have had a problem with it, but you know, now, you know, I get it. I mean, he's one of the best position players ever to play here, Chase Utley. Next to Mike Schmidt, you could argue he's second best. So infielder, yeah, and it wasn't like he was here for a couple of years, and it's part of his career. I mean, it really is the bulk of his career was here. And, you know, you have to kind of take everything into – this wasn't like in the middle of a pennant chase where you did this. It wasn't in a close game where he just hit the home run that broke a tie going into the ninth inning or something. So, you know, you have to kind of throw all that in there and kind of judge each situation on its own and, you know, kind of give it a pass.
I'm with you 100%. I didn't give anything away in the way I asked the question. I'm with you 100% for all the reasons you cited. You know, it wasn't a playoff situation. He's a special guy. I hate that word too, but I'm throwing it out there. You know, he played 13 years here. The way he played, as dedicated as he was, and, you know, really gave his body and his heart and soul to this team and the organization. And I thought it was nice that the fans appreciate it. I had no problem at all. Gordon, we only have about a minute and a half left before we go to archive for final thoughts. Any Olympic thoughts? I'll just leave it out there like that.
Olympic thoughts, I mean, you know, I wrote a column, and there's been some stuff to turn my stomach on it. But, you know, I remember the 72 Olympics and when, you know, there was a tragedy there. But, you know, I remember when the Olympic basketball team lost. And ever since then, you know, I always – you know, I know some people almost root against the men's team because they think they're a bunch of prima donnas. But, you know, I'm glad they got the gold medal. I just kind of feel it's an American sport, and I really have a problem. You know, it happened a few years after, you know, they lost to Argentina, won the gold medal one year. And the only thing that made me feel somewhat okay with that was that Pepe Sanchez was a point guard for Argentina, the former Temple guy. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, that's a nice thing. Nice, you know, and there were some good moments. There's always some great moments. Hussein Bolt, last time we're going to see him, and, you know, that, you know, I happened to be watching just at that time, and that's a nice thing as well. So, yeah, I guess try to focus on the positive. You know, it ended up on some positive notes. There were really it started with some controversy, and it, you know, there was a lot of controversy that happened, and, you know, it does leave a little bit of a sour taste.
Okay. Well, it's, like I said, yeah, the Olympics sort of were just there for me. I didn't get into them. I'm happy to see some gold, and like you said, watching the same Bolt probably for the last time was cool, but that's it. So I just want to say before we go into archives, everybody check out PhillyFanatics.com. Thank you for listening live. Gordon's got a column up on the Olympics. I have a column up on Chase Utley. It'll be changed quickly, and we have Phillies Notebook Eagle stuff. Thank you for listening. All right, Gordon, archive time, and we'll just go right to final thoughts here.
Two thoughts on the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is kind of odd because, you know, I really could care less about the Pittsburgh Steelers. But just, you know, two people that I kind of root for. I don't know why I always kind of rooted for Nick Foles, but, you know, he found a landing spot after, you know, he requested a release from the Rams and was released. He found a landing spot with Andy Reid in Kansas City. But, you know, looking at Landry Jones, you know, and you mentioned he's a third string, but their second string is not in good shape physically. And Gretkowski, he's got some kind of scary-sounding injury. That's one of those ones that's worse, that sounds worse than it is. And, I can't believe that a team like that really has aspirations to go pretty deep in the playoffs, you know, really wouldn't realize that, you know, yeah, some defensive backs made good reads on the ball. I thought Jalen Watkins made a good read on the ball, but that guy doesn't put a lot on the ball either. To me, he's a borderline third string quarterback. And if he has to go into the season as their number two, if their number two isn't ready, and it sounds to me like he may or may not be ready. You know, I find it odd. They didn't look at Nick Foles also, who kind of hung out there a little bit before he found the job. And then also, you know, I failed to mention, you know, I'm really rooting for Tyler Matakevich, the guy who had a fabulous career at Temple and ended up with the Bednarik Award and the Nagurski Award. He's got a tough situation there. From what I understand, they would either have to keep an extra linebacker than the teams would normally keep, or somebody would have to get hurt for him to make the 53-man roster. But, you know, he's playing well enough, and he made a nice solo tackle in the backfield with his vintage Matakevich. You know, against the Eagles. I was never so happy to see an Eagle thrown for a loss. And I probably wouldn't have been happy if it was a regular season game, but in that situation, I was happy. And, you know, but the thing is, one thing to keep in the back of our minds here, if he ends up on Pittsburgh's practice squad, you can poach a player off a practice squad if you put him on your 53-man roster. And as we talked about, the Eagles are a little thin at linebacker, and they probably would be looking at players like that maybe to fill out their linebacking core. And wouldn't it be a nice story, you know, whether he fits their system or not and whether they liked him or not? I'm sure if they liked him enough, they would have drafted him instead of Joe Walker. Wouldn't it be a nice story if he comes back and plays in the stadium he played his whole college career in? And, you know, sort of, he's not his hometown, he's from up in New England somewhere. But, you know, if that kind of came full circle, and, you know, a lot of Temple people would be happy as well. But, yeah, but you know, first things first, it would be nice to see him make the Pittsburgh roster straight out, 53-man roster. So those are two thoughts there.
As soon as you started that, I was thinking, you know, he could end up back. I mean, he doesn't make the Steelers squad, so he's certainly someone you would look at. My final thought, I actually have two. I'm gonna start actually one just quickly while we're sticking with football. Philadelphia Soul have a championship game on Friday, the Arena Bowl. Tough task against the Arizona Rattlers, who have, I believe, won five Arena Bowl titles and won last year as well. But, you know, it's arena football. It's not NFL, but it's always nice to see a team progress the championship game. And by the way, the game's kind of gimmicky, I find, arena football, but doesn't change the fact that Darius Reynolds, who caught the winning touchdown with 4 seconds left, made one of the great catches you'll ever see. If you haven't seen it, go out of your way to see it in the back corner of the end zone. It's a nice throw by the quarterback, Dan Ronnebuck. It's just over the defender's hand. And Darius Reynolds makes an unbelievable catch in the end zone. Unbelievable catch anytime, but to make that catch with 4 seconds left and win the game just adds to the magnitude of the catch, even if it is arena football. So congratulations to Soul, and good luck on Friday. My other final thought, and Gordon, I'm going to get some of your feedback on this at some point. I don't want to get into the whole incident, the Ryan Lochte incident. Ryan Lochte's a knucklehead. He's always been a knucklehead. You can find interviews on YouTube if you want to look for him. Look for one with Channel 29. He's not the brightest bulb in the room, say that. But, you know, and I understand what he did was wrong, and I understand the thing. My goodness, you would have thought he shot the president of Brazil the way this was covered on the news networks. I mean, I think there was one point it was like, Gordon, am I wrong? It was like 2 or 3 hours straight of like
3 hours straight. Yeah, 3 hours straight while Louisiana floats away. You know, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a knucklehead. Yeah, he I almost say he made up the whole story because, you know, parts of it were elements of it were true, that they were ordered out of the car by a guy with a gun and you know, made to hand over money. He, of course, left out the part that they were being asked to hand over money to pay for damages that they had done because they were drunk. But, but they were taken out at gunpoint, so he did have some of the details right. But, my God, like I said, you would have thought he shot somebody, shot a government official or something. The coverage was so over the top, it was ridiculous. So you're agreeing with me, correct, Gordon, on this?
I do agree with you. I think journalism's in a starry state. We could get into a. I know it's off point from sports, but within the context of his career, it's a little tainted now. I know, like you said, he's always been a knucklehead, but he's really been a successful swimmer. kind of in Michael Phelps' shadow in terms of medals won, but he's had a successful career himself. And now, when you say his name, that's what people are going to think of from now on. And the covers didn't help that either. So, he may regret it at some point down the road if he grows up. And a lot of these guys are pampered, to beyond belief, and that might have a lot to do with it. He may grow up and regret it sometimes somewhere down the road, but other people aren't going to forget it, and the covers didn't help with that either.
It was such overkill, and put it this way, all the people who are doping, that affects the competition. To me, that's as big a story as that. Well, we didn't see that much of that, even though it happened. We had a Kenyan track coach. Take a urine test for one of his runners. I know it's not the United States, so maybe this was a bigger deal. But in terms of the Olympics affecting competition, that's a bigger deal. Okay, hey, it's a big deal. It's a big story. But like you said, Louisiana is like flooded, and they had 20,000 rescues there, and we're talking about a swimmer making up a story to hide the fact that he was drunk and vandalized things and had to give up some money. No, it's just ridiculous. But anyway. The Olympics are over today. I won't be a cynic and say thank goodness, but I'll just say, it's nice while it lasted for 2 weeks, and it did overshadow the Little League World Series stuff, which I'm happy about. But we can get back to the NFL and some of the other major sports now that the Olympics are over. That's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. Like I said, please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Read Gordon's column on the Olympics. We have a top 10 list, Eagles' top 10 concerns. And I have to say, if I had to write it now, I might change a couple of them, because I think I posted that right before the Lane Johnson suspension news or potential suspension news came out. So I think we have a couple more concerns than I had on that list. Eagles coverage up there, my Phillies notebook up there, my column on Chase Utley, and we'll have lots of good stuff coming up this next week. So thank you for listening for Gordon, and great job, Gordon. Thank you for Gordon Glantz. I am Eric Fisher, and that's it for this week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.